Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Multi-Use First podcast. Happy Earth Week. This week is no different than usual. We get to talk to another innovative CEO. This time, it's Jamie McCroskery of Bluebird Climate, a innovative software technology that's focused on making better, sustainable, and circular decisions for the CPG industry. We got to really dive into this episode and the details of what it means to, again, grow a company that's focused on really pioneering new things for sustainability decision-making. Again, a great episode for Earth Week. We hope you're going out there and maybe planting a tree or going out picking up some garbage. Either way, thanks for listening. And please, if you have any questions or you'd like to be on the podcast, please reach out to podcast@reebly.com, and we'll see you on the next one. Jamie, thanks so much for joining us here on the Multiuseverse podcast. We have Jamie from Bluebird Climate. Tell us a little about yourself. Tell us, our listeners, what you're up to over at Bluebird.
Yeah, Gar, thanks for having me. So I am, my background's in technology. I was a product manager at Dropbox. I have been interested in sustainability for quite some time. Like, you know, teach intro to backcountry skiing and rock climbing and mountaineering classes out in the Sierra and Cascades. And I've seen firsthand some of the climate impacts that everyone, you know, gets pretty worked up about.
That is a city kid I only hear about. Really, that's what you're saying? That it's like, I'm doing a lot, but I'm really just from the city. Yeah.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, you know, you can see these effects where you, kind of wherever you are now. The entire West Coast covered in smoke for half the year. But yes. I think, you know, before that started happening, I was personally motivated to start thinking about this stuff and kind of got to the space. I had been leading the tech team at Glossier for a while and saw that they had this sustainability problem where all of their customers were essentially like hammering them on sustainability across Instagram, but like no one internally kind of knew what to do about it. You know, CPG and consumer brands are good.
No. I want to stop real quickly so that people can really understand the impact of what you're saying there, which is Glossier being the makeup and how else would you describe sort of what they focus on, sort of consumer products around beauty?
Yeah. So they're a beauty and wellness brand that was, I think, pretty hot for quite some time for the millennial and Gen Z audience.
Yes.
And like really have like pioneered developing products with your customers. And Instagram was like, you know, a big part of them growing for a long time.
And so what I loved hearing in that is that the Gen Z millennial audience basically was like, hey, we want more of what's been going on from a sustainability standpoint. We want to know more about what you all were doing, which left a brand as usual going like, oh, we got to address this. We got to actually service our clients in that way. And then that's where I interrupted, is that's really where you came in on this a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. And what's funny is like brands are, you know, you're trying to have some vision in the market and create your thesis. But ultimately, you know, you're like meeting customers where they're at. And it seemed like their customers were starting to care about sustainability, which is not really like a competency that they had internally. You know, they also had millennials working inside who cared about it personally. But if you think about, you know, if you're a consumer brand, you have a lot of products to launch. That's a pretty tight calendar. And just being asked to do like carbon or like waste calculations in real time with all your different ideas and then somehow communicate that to your customers, it's pretty hard to
help start. Yeah, and help me better understand it, because I think, again, I love the industry of which you come from in that, where when there's tight product demand and tight schedules around delivery, that does not allow itself or lend itself to diving further into the sustainability of these products and then being able, you're almost playing then catch up. Talk a little bit more about that process then of like, why is that so difficult when you're delivering a product, like a physical product?
Yeah, totally. I mean, and even taking one step back, physical products are fascinating for sustainability. You know, if you look at consumer brands, 95% of carbon emissions come from the products, not like the electricity in the office. It's like the product. You know, if you're making a beauty product, you have chemical goop wrapped in paper, wrapped in plastic, wrapped in paper, transported around the world a couple times. And it's pretty hard to figure out what sustainability even means or like how you make decisions. So I think today, in large part, sustainability has become this kind of like orthogonal workflow. It's like, okay, I'm going to go develop products, figure out marketing messaging, and then I'm going to figure out sustainability. But in reality, like, you're making choices about the products throughout the entire product development cycle, all of which have impacts on sustainability. So what you really need is a way to inject sustainability to all those different decision points. So it's no longer the separate thing. It's just, okay, well, I'm going to develop product and know about sustainability when I'm bringing it to market.
And so then that really then drives what I loved hearing you talk about previously, actually, which was, what is a sustainable product? I think what I love too, in the era of which there's much greenwashing in our industry, what drives the decision-making or even the marketing of saying something is sustainable? You kind of have a nice thought on that, which is a kind of commonplace here too, that there is no sustainable product, right?
Yeah, it's the paradox. It's the thing that everyone cares about, sustainability, you know, like, everyone deeply cares about it, but like, what is it?
Yep.
And also the fact that you're producing products, I mean, there might be some innovations out there that replenish the earth in some way, but by virtue of taking some raw material and then transforming it into a product people are using, you know, that has an environmental impact. So saying that product is sustainable is like, well, it's like, you know, it still has an impact. And that's kind of the challenge here, is that like, there's innovation happening everywhere across the supply chain and transportation, materials, manufacturing. Keeping track of that's really hard. And that also means that the bar for like what quote unquote sustainable means is also a moving target. And that's, I didn't mention this, but we work a lot with the founders of the Patagonia Environmental Assessment Program, who essentially like built the space for how to assess materials and products at scale really fast. And they're like, yeah, you know, we've been trying to keep people forever. This is like a moving target. You're not just done with it, which is daunting for a lot of brands that aren't thinking about it or thinking about something they have to solve. But it's also an opportunity because you have like this continual fountain of wins that you can find in your supply chain and celebrate those with your customers.
I love the way that you present that, which is, this is an opportunity to further connect, further educate, and further sort of be a part of your consumers' lives in that way of taking that journey along with them, almost, if you're speaking about it correctly and you're presenting that information in a way that is almost tangible and digestible. What has sort of gone into the work that you all have started to really pioneer in terms of making those dots a little bit easier, not only for the consumer, but really for those at the company level to try to actually be able to pull the right levers for, to make better decisions around these types of product decisions?
Yeah, and I guess I haven't even really described what it is that we do.
We're like getting there. Exactly.
The shape of it.
Yeah, exactly. We're setting it up for Bluebird there. Yeah.
Yeah. Like 20 minutes in, we'll eventually tell people. but yeah, we essentially make software that brings the power of a sustainability team for consumer brands to make low carbon products. So this is, in other words, we essentially have this product development platform where it's really easy to produce low carbon products that are affordable, which is key because oftentimes sustainability can be expensive. It doesn't have to be. And then we also provide tools to translate that sustainability to customers and retailers so you can influence brand perception in an authentic way. And so like a lot of the challenge that, you know, you're talking about is like sustainability is science, really. And we're talking about invisible gas that somehow weighs something.
Yes.
It does bad things to the environment. That's something that consumers care about, but they do not understand it, nor do brands. And it's this funny space, Gar, where it's like, you know, brands are ultimately listening to what retailers and consumers want. Retailers and consumers like vaguely know about sustainability and are asking for the wrong things, which then means that brands are asking their vendors for the wrong things, which means they're asking the wrong material providers the wrong things. And so we're trying to build the tools where we're kind of like helping brands and customers point the demand and anxiety of climate into the right innovations to layer into their products.
Yeah. I mean, from what I've seen of the product from the previous conversations that you and I have had, it really does come down to making something real and visible so that more decisions can be made. And so when you start to make that intangible tangible and you're saying, oh yeah, all of this CO2 that's in the air is caused by these types of five or six or however many decision criteria are going into a certain product, then it almost becomes more obvious. Of course, everyone wants to make the best decision. It's just, how to make it. How do you actually empower them to say, oh no, of course, we want this. And yes, we understand that maybe this increases or decreases the product cost, but maybe it costs a half a cent more. And some brands will make that decision and be like, oh yeah, that's totally worth it. We can communicate that now more effectively to our consumers. And then the whole process is then better supported upstream and downstream. Am I sort of encapsulating that correctly?
Yeah, totally. I mean, that's the thing. You kind of have to meet. So making things less abstract,
yes,
and complicated is the key of all of this.
Yes, yes.
Which is a lot of what we do. You know, we like have these complex algorithms and take all this science and math and just say, like, you're doing good on carbon emissions and you could do better if you could use this packaging from this manufacturer. I think what's super interesting here, Gar, is that like you touched on some of like the dynamics in the space, and that you have some early adopters here. Like, I often think about sustainability as like a slow burn market that is going to catch on fire pretty fast, right, at some point in the near future. Like, a lot of our customers here, you know, we're working with like Beauty Counter, a function of Beauty Glossy, and a bunch of our smaller kind of like insurgent brands in which sustainability is the cornerstone of their branding. It is their brand promise to their customers to be sustainable,
yes,
whatever, however they defined it. And they use us to live up to that promise. So it's super valuable. But for like the later adopters, you know, it's like you kind of have to figure out a way to either make their core workflow of getting a product out the door better and faster, or save them costs, or some other business driver, which we've been, you know, we have plans to unlock. But I bring that up because Reaply has like a very interesting alternative take. Like, we've gone into like, okay, we're going to help these brands essentially build brand value and then ultimately save costs because we can do some fun things when you get into production products. But you guys have a different approach.
Yeah. And this is, I appreciate the softball here too on the nice juxtaposition, which is, yeah, we're going the internal cost savings approach by saying, hey, stop doing the take, make, waste thing that you all do as an operation. How about you look at your own circularity? And that also might better inform your either your efficiencies within your organization or your downstream decision-making with other vendors, or even your upstream with original manufacturers, or however that might be. But again, similarly in it all starts with what's made visible. How do you actually make, you know, because a lot of this is a problem that exists but doesn't because you can't see it. You didn't know it was there. And so very much on our end too, organizations don't see that they're wasting X amount of resources, piles of stuff every year, tons of stuff every year. They don't see it, and so therefore it's not in the data, which means to them, it's like, oh, it's not there. It's not a real problem.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I think in a lot of what we do, it comes with a little bit of a cost of recognition of, oh, this is the actual problem. And so that's always been interesting for us to say, hey, everything you're doing from an ESG perspective is amazing. Everything you're doing from waste reduction for your consumers is amazing. But have you thought about yourself? And then that often sort of leads to a head scratch of like, oh my gosh, like there's so much more impact internally than we even realized, which is a fun conversation to have because it needs to come with zero shame as well, which I'm sure is probably an element of how you both communicate to brands and communicate to consumers, right?
No, yeah. I mean, well, first of all, yeah. I mean, we're both in the market building business here.
Yes.
It's not like, you know, the companies are producing like a Reaply, you know, a different competitor version of Reaply. Like, okay, now we're going to replace it with something that's slightly better. That's Reaply. It's like, they're like learning about what the space is. It's the same for us, which makes for an interesting go-to-market and sales strategy. Because there is a lot of, like, we essentially had to build a lot of product that just like teases value. Like, hey, you know, this isn't as hard as you thought it was. B, here is value that you can get immediately. You didn't even know it was there. And it actually is very hidden too. You know, like a lot of companies, because they've been in existence, may be doing things that are actually pretty good from a sustainability perspective, and they just don't even know it.
We're
building the software to essentially highlight these hidden wins, which creates the carrot internally for a lot of these brands to then make future investments. Because it's like they understand it's like a new lever to essentially develop a relationship with the customers.
I love that position. You're right. Because it's like you may not know, actually, again, just as much as there's hidden negative impact, there could be hidden positive. And you kind of have to go down this journey to find that. How do you even start that conversation with a brand? How is that even sort of, how do you go to market and say, hey, this is the reality. This is who we are. This is how we can help. On Reaply's end, we have to elbow out some budget room. We have to really work with some stakeholders and create that opportunity. How have you found that that's changed over sort of the growth of the company, the growth of your team? How have you found that that's the best way to communicate to your clients?
Yeah, I think sustainability is, I personally had to grow quite a bit as a founder in this space. You know, my training is as a product manager, so I'm, not a consultant with like dozens of companies. Like, here, go find the problem for a customer, and then you go solve it.
Yes.
But what happens if the customer like doesn't realize they have a problem, or it's like slow, the market changing so fast?
Yes.
That like everyone, there's this amorphous space where like people are at different stages of complexity and maturity and are all asking for different things. Like, I actually just got an email from like Walmart and Harry's and whoever else asking for different things, because they all have a different, like every brand and retailer is a special snowflake, which means that as a company, we have to be super opinionated about what we are doing and what we are not doing. It also means that we have to be open-minded and meet brands where they're at and not have like that sort of shaming mindset. Especially around sustainability. It's like, the goal is to march in the right direction and, have it help your business at the same time, not just be perfect. And what's critical there too, is that like, you don't have to be perfect. It's impossible, actually.
Yes. And that's probably the best way to start there too, is communicating that there, again, no perfection. It's all a journey. There's never going to be a destination. It's all about iterating slowly and getting better, better over time. But how do you start to, who are you going to? How are you communicating this to those clients? That's been such a fun journey on our end to realize, oh, it is not just one department's problem. I mean, we might start in sustainability, but we'll end up in finance, or we'll end up in procurement or surplus or some other disposition or waste management category. What have you found in that way where you say, oh, the sustainability stakeholder came, but boy, there's a whole nother conversation to be having operations. How have you seen that evolve?
Yeah, totally. And I think the sustainability profession and departments within these companies is undergoing rapid change. I mean, historically, it's been, you can tell a lot by where that function sits. Is it under marketing or PR? Is it under HR? Is it under product and supply chain? And so I think that the challenges, and this is where like our Patagonia team has come in quite a bit, because they like have consulted in this space for decades. It's for us, it's been a challenge to figure out, okay, like we roughly know that what type of customer segment has different problems. But navigating the organization is extremely difficult for this kind of stuff, because sustainability is inherently unknown. And if it's owned by a sustainability team, they might not be empowered in the organization, especially when we're talking about marketing and supply chain product development. They're like on the sidelines historically and having to shout in and tell people to do the right things.
From an advisory capacity in that way, where it's...
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. And, having an advisory capacity is great, but also if you're trying to make real-time decisions about your products, you can't afford to have one person there like at every single meeting. So it's been interesting, because every time we talk to sustainability team, they're like, oh my God, this helps scale our team so much. But at the same time, for us, we also know that budget is in marketing for this kind of stuff.
Yes.
So it's been like a pretty circuitous journey. And it's actually been one of the biggest challenges for our company, is like figuring out what that playbook looks like. And where we've started is, the reason we actually have a pilot program here is to work with a bunch of these companies in the space to figure out what these patterns look like. Mm. And so I think it's been easiest to meet companies who already really believe in this stuff and are looking for a solution, because they're really on the cutting edge and you're essentially just solving something from they already know exists. That then empowers us, because our brands are talking about us, to then show the later adopter brands like, oh, like there are different ways of developing products that have to be sustainable as well. And oh, it doesn't have to be expensive forever, rather than having to make that argument myself. Like, there's a fast follower effect that brand looks at each other all the time.
I love that, because again, even when brands are looking at one another, we still have to learn from someone on how to speak to different structures or different hierarchies of certain larger clients. It's been one of our, I mean, early on for us, we kind of identified, all right, our biggest problem might be that we can't learn enough fast enough. And it's like, in order to do that, we need to be working with people, which is great. Why pilots are super important is we can do a pilot, we can work with an organization, figure out how they work. But we actually had to evolve to a model where, which has been very successful for us, which is actually offering now a consultancy type of offering. Because what ends up happening is, even in a pilot scenario, we found, and I loved this for our team because it was such an evolution, where even in a pilot, we found that some of the doors still remained closed. But by simply getting a contract going, those doors would actually open up to more of our team members to explore and collaborate with organizations in ways that actually lend itself to being able to further ideate, further create, connect with more stakeholders, and then know, oh, wait, this is how this works, to exactly your point earlier of like, because sustainability sits under this department, this is maybe how we have to communicate to this type of organization. So that was enormously helpful for us to learn early. I say early on, we really started this probably last year, and it's been enormously helpful for us to just weave our way through an organization to understand, okay, we're in this together. We're partners. We can figure this out. We just have to really work and ideate together.
Totally. So I think for us, we've been super lucky in finding those pilot customers who are so motivated to see the space change and evolve into something better that they're willing to like engage with us on a weekly basis, give us like all their data, all the time in the world, or for all their brothers, sister
that's
brands.
Awesome.
Yeah. And I actually really would recommend for any early stage software company thinking about sustainability, like, you know, obviously you want to build software. That's what your business is going to be around. And you want to be a consultancy, but, I would recommend doing the consulting because you're really going to learn about the problems and like what you can and can't automate fast.
I think it's also fascinating from our standpoint because, and this is getting into the nitty gritty of scaling a software company, it's sometimes easier to get a certain contract through a PO or through some sort of what other contracting vehicle they might have. It might be easier to do that first then get what typically might also be like a master services agreement or also known as like an MSA with a larger organization. So I love your advice there for any other startup in circularity listening to this is like, think about the ways that you can decrease your own friction to learning more, collaborating more, and then you can work on all of those learnings applied to the software. That's the whole point. But I could not recommend that more. I think it's been enormously helpful for us.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No. This was going to be mostly about sort of how you're growing the team and how you're seeing sort of the team evolve in that way and how the product's going. I'd love to learn more about sort of what you all see next on the horizon and how you've really started to take it to the next level.
Yeah. So our team is so funny. It's like the motley crew that needs to come together to make this kind of software.
I love it. It's the
best. There's a reason why it hasn't existed before. It's like, well, partially the market's maturing, partially you need like this crazy like, disparate skill set. So we have, you know, the old head design Kickstarter, a co-founder from Unilever who knows supply chain sustainability, people from Rag & Bone and Levi's, and then we have like software engineers. So we have like product design, engineering, supply chain, sustainability coming together. And so we have a pretty tight-knit team that works pretty heavily with advisors actually in the space. So we work with a lot of Patagonia and Levi's people and
that's
Lancome. The idea is like, to your point about moving fast, your core advantage of a startup is learning fast and moving fast. And you know, eventually you want to get to the point where you're trying to scale, but like, especially when you're early trying to creatively problem solve and do customer discovery, you have to keep the team lean and learn. And ideally you have customers there to help you.
Yes.
So we've, we're about halfway through this pilot program here. And like, we're getting active feedback on a weekly basis, which is great.
That's fantastic.
I think just to give you some sense of like the successes thus far, because that's like ultimately what we care about. Like, we've helped some brands reduce carbon emissions in their products by like 78% and like 1/100th of the time. Hmm. That's obviously like, some of these are small brands that like can make choices really fast, but they're essentially using our software to evaluate the plethora of options they have between like packaging formats, materials, vendor locations, manufacturing processes, and then asking their vendors, say like, hey, we like predefined what we know is sustainable here and we have some cost parameters. Like, can you make it happen? And so it like shortcuts them essentially evaluating all like the tons and tons and tons of options out there for their products, and then they know what they want. So that's been awesome. I think what we're doing ultimately is trying to make this not a decision-making tool, but actually a tool to make it easier to just produce products. So the idea is we're actually working with co-manufacturers and vendors now, onboarding them onto the platform so that our brands can collaborate with them in real time.
That's really cool.
On this stuff. The idea is like, okay, instead of saying, hey, switch to like, you know, PCR plastic produced in the US, which is like a really dumb example, I should say, here it is. And also we have some financing tools that's cheaper than you otherwise would be able to get it.
Providing an operational software that can really say, hey, this isn't where necessarily you're looking at the data, then going back to the team and making that decision. You can actually take a hold of that decision-making on platform and sort of do that as a team. Is that the idea?
That's the idea. You go back to what I mentioned earlier, which is like sustainability historically has been this orthogonal workflow.
Totally.
It's like, oh, back house, like we don't want to worry about it. Like, can you go calculate carbon emissions and then like on a yearly basis or whatever? We're embedding sustainability into the product development process. And so the idea is like, just make the product development process better and also layer in sustainability visibility and lower some of those barriers around knowledge and cost. So that's just way easier to make these products. And oh, by the way, now we also have marketing and production people in the same platform for the first time and can see the specs and the marketing message you can say around sustainability.
Question that you can answer or not, but I'm curious what the pricing models looks like. How are you sort of thinking through like user access, permissions types of things where it's a for anybody listening, it's a reality of creating software of like, how do you both generate revenue from a SaaS perspective, but then also gate access appropriately to those that might be most impactful and less impactful to the growth of your product?
That is such a good question. This is the second reason why a pilot program is so awesome.
Yes.
So you get customer feedback on your product to make your product awesome, but also you get customer feedback on your business model. And like, I've been reading a ton of books, talking to a bunch of pricing people who are like, you have to think about pricing levels, but also how you package things. Especially in a market that's new, where like yes. customers aren't used to spending money on this stuff. So we're actually working with that with our customers.
Love
but
that.
Like broadly, the way it's going to work is like, we have, this is a multi-sided, we're essentially building a multi-sided marketplace here.
Yep.
So the idea is like build demand by making it really easy for brands to figure out how to make decisions. And like it's way easier. And also that thing can't be really expensive because you have like brands have never done this before. So you're essentially showing them this new way of thinking, make it easy because it's already hard. If they want to market that, we know that's really valuable to them. So you can charge extra for that on a retaining SaaS basis because you have to keep claims live and updated with data. To me, like that's all in service of building a huge data moat for
yes.
us, because I'm getting into like strategy here. But like the idea is, we know what product development calendars are for these brands, what products they're producing, when, what they need, what their sustainability profiles are. We also know now who sells what at what cost and what their sustainability profiles of those vendors are. And so the idea is then connect them. And that's where you can enable like a way larger business model outside just a SaaS fee. It's like a marketplace. They're great.
Well, and I think that so goes along with a lot of what we're thinking about too, is as we begin to know more, it starts to become, and I'm not putting too fine of a point on this, but predictive to a certain degree of saying, hey, by making these choices, this is what you're going to see. These are the other decisions that you could be making that's going to affect product builds, launches, whatever it's going to be. And for us, that's super important because the way we're thinking about it too on our end, getting into some future strategy stuff, is, all right, we know generally now procurement and disposition schedules for furniture, for some types of FF&E category, furniture, fixtures, and equipment, for those that are listening. And how do we start to better predict when those are going to be dispositioned, how they're being depreciated in terms of their value, better educate the market a little bit on the decisions that need to be made to make the most sustainable, in quotes, decisions, but really the best, less impactful decisions around where something goes.
Yeah, I mean, I think data here, you're always trying to do something in service of the next thing.
Yes.
And ultimately have an opinion about the meta problem that you're trying to solve and the vision you're trying to build, which again, in sustainability is so important because there's so many things you could do. For us, you know, we essentially have a thesis here that, like, hey, as I mentioned earlier, like, brands are essentially not sure where to point their demand for sustainable product inputs. And there aren't a whole lot of actual solutions out there in the market today. That's why the price of recycled plastic and organic cotton is like a billion X. But if you look at like what's happening upstream, there the technology exists to decarbonize a lot of these products. So like using renewable energy in a yarn weaving factory, for example, it's like that thing is economically viable, but like no one knows to ask for it. So
it's the visibility question again. The
market for that stuff.
Yeah, it's the visibility question.
Decarbonize that way.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. I think what I love about that too is, and I hope what you all will likely be involved in too is, your point about recycled plastic, even about or virgin plastic or new plastic is so crazy. Where those are some really complicated economic drivers around. Who's paying for recycled plastic and why, and how much there of, or how much there is of it, which is again another crazy economic sort of complication where it's like there's going to be a point very soon where that price of for recycled plastic is going to go up. So you might as well start really maintaining your supply chains now around recycled plastic because that's going to be quite competitive in the next 2 to 3 or 4 years around that demand for recycled plastic.
Yeah, it's like, it's actually pretty brutal already, but yeah.
it's good to hear though, it's already starting.
Yeah, which is good and bad. I mean, it's good because the demand is there and supply hasn't caught up for a whole host of reasons, but it also means those are barriers for brands adopting these things who like don't, you know, want to pass on cost to their customers, especially when inflation's going through the roof. So it's an interesting time. I think like we're in the market creation business, both on education, but also like upstream visibility and saying, hey, there's these other materials or processes that are efficient and decarbonized that you should invest in.
Yes, to all of that. We have learned so much already. To encapsulate sort of everything here too, of a nice call to action for both brands that might find this of interest or consumers that want to know more, or even somebody looking to support Bluebird. What do you see as a call to action here for the listener to say, all right, this is how maybe you should get involved further, or this is what we're looking into. What do you have to say for that listener?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, I'm so glad you're interested in learning more. At Bluebird here, like I'm always interested in talking to people, whether they're consumers or brands who are trying to get started or like take their sustainability program to the next level and like really operationalize this stuff. So yeah, I mean, just get in touch. Like you can reach me at jamie@bluebirdclimate.com. We also have a newsletter that's like starting to have somewhat increased velocity with some of the learnings we have in this space.
Excellent.
You know, from the pilot program, we've learned a lot. Like there's a lot of things you can do today that actually cut costs, for example, and carbon emissions, especially around transportation. And so we're sharing those, but mostly I think like, I mean, I'm not entirely sure who's in the audience. There are some things you can just get started with today that, you know, you can ask your manufacturers for, but otherwise, yeah, please just get in touch. I'm happy to talk about this stuff all day.
Well, I love that. And again, call to action to get in touch with Jamie. Also so appreciate, again, we're trying to do the same thing always, which is not just learn in a vacuum, but try to get more people involved by sharing what we're learning. Because even though that might be counterintuitive to some, you know, intellectual property, it still is so important to grow our message, to grow our market in that way. Because again, we're pushing the market forward. So the more people that join, the more people that learn, the more people that push that conversation, the better. Well, Jamie, thanks so much for joining us today. I look forward to our next conversation.
Likewise, Gar. Appreciate the opportunity.